a production of the California Society of CPAs and CalCPA Institute. I'm Bill Spaniel. Do you know how many currencies there are around the globe? According to a Google search, the United Nations currently recognizes 180 currencies, including the U.S. dollar, the United Kingdom pound, the euro, and the Japanese yen. These currencies are represented by metal coins and paper bills. But in recent years, a new type of currency has been developed, one that is not affiliated with a particular nation and has no physical representation. These are so-called crypto or cyber currencies, the most famous of which is Bitcoin. To find out how these currencies came about and whether or not they can be used by the average person, we talk with Dan Morris, a San Jose CPA who has advised clients whether or not they should use cryptocurrencies in their transactions. Hello, Dan. Welcome to Financial Empowerment.
Hi, Bill. How are you today?
Very good. Dan, our topic today is something that seems to be in the news all the time lately, Bitcoin. Unfortunately, I, and I think a lot of people, do not understand what Bitcoin is all about. Is it an investment, a currency, both, or something else? I understand you have some background on this subject, so I hope you can explain to our audience what Bitcoin is.
Well, Bitcoin is the most famous of what we call cryptocurrencies, which are digital forms of money. And it's predicated on an interesting technology called a distributed ledger technology, mm-hmm. which the nickname is a blockchain. So depending on what country you live in, Bitcoin can be one of many things. In the United States, Bitcoin is defined as property from an Internal Revenue Service perspective, from the commodities group of people who regulate commodities. They think that Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are commodities. From the SEC perspective, they think that many aspects of cryptocurrencies and Bitcoins are more akin to securities. And from a U.S. Treasury perspective, in the Financial Crimes Network, they want to treat it like money. So for the most part, cryptocurrencies should be treated like property. So buying and selling them are more common to be like you would be buying and selling your desks and office furniture than it is money.
So in some ways, it's like a stock?
Well, it's not like a stock because although you own it, if you own it, you own it in a digital wallet. It physically exists, but only on a computer system. You have a representation of what they call a coin, right? So there are no physical Bitcoin. You can kind of fake one. If you look on the internet, you'll see one that looks like a gold piece with a B and, you know, lines through it, but doesn't physically exist, although everybody in this, what they call this distributed ledger technology, this blockchain, knows all the people at all the time who own their cumulative number of coin or fractional numbers of coin. And it floats in market value based on willing buyers and willing sellers.
Let's go back a little bit here. How did Bitcoin come into existence?
Bitcoin came into existence because a software engineer, they believe he's from Japan, and I forget his name at the moment, but he developed a protocol that, again, was this blockchain that said, we're going to allow computers to agree on an algorithm on a money supply. If you think about what the role of the central bank is or the Federal Reserve is to essentially print money, and over time, the Federal Reserve prints more money and money gets destroyed and money gets added back and then they put it in the bank and then they loan it out again. All that process of central banking is handled by this distributed ledger. And what happens is that computers will solve a mathematical problem, and the computer that solves the problem and gets all other computers in the network to agree that the solution that was provided is correct, that computer that solved that problem is issued a coin, and they call that mining. So like digging in the gold mine, I found a nugget. And everybody agrees that I have a nugget and it's now mine. And then that becomes part of the currency that is then eligible to be used for transactions. And so, Bitcoin is volatile. That's something that people should remember.
So a computer algorithm issues a Bitcoin. Is that somewhat correct?
It solves a math problem. And what happens is it takes more and more computers to solve the more complex math problem. Let's take it out of money. Let's talk about title and houses. You and I both have houses, and we both probably acquired title insurance at one time. And the reason we got title insurance was because the bank who was going to loan me money wanted to make sure that they had good collateral. And the only way they could get that was, yes, there was this ledger book down at the county, but those can be stolen and those can be cheated. And somebody wanted to make sure I really had a right to buy that property and the bank could loan me the money. Think if all of the properties that we had in the country were put onto a distributed ledger technology, we wouldn't need title insurance because the distributed ledger would, all the computers would agree that they've tracked every piece of property and its history. And then you and I decide to buy new houses and sell our old houses, those new transactions would be represented by this mathematical algorithm, this calculation, and it would be locked into a block. So our old title would be updated with our new title, but it would be public, and because it's distributed, nobody can hack it. So the ability to really hack and undo history, very difficult. So the distributed ledger technology rewards itself because thousands of independent computers all have to agree onto a network that the math problem that was solved solves the equation that was presented. And it's beyond my, I'm just an accountant. It's beyond my math understanding, but that's how it works.
How is the value of Bitcoin determined? Are there denominations of Bitcoin? How does one determine that?
The easiest way is go to Google and say, what's today's value in Bitcoin, like you would a stock? Unlike stock in IBM or American Airlines, there are no physical assets that back up the value of Bitcoin. It's all what willing buyers and willing sellers agree is the value of the Bitcoin. So let's step back a little bit. Let's think about what money is all about. The money that you have in your wallet isn't really anything other than paper. It's merely a physical representation of a promise to be good if you take it to a bank. That's it, right? So it's all based on the fair faith and credit of the United States taxpayers, essentially. So to a large degree, the money that we carry in our pocket is effective virtual. If you go one step further to the credit card that you have in your wallet, when I go to a restaurant and I hand them my Visa card or my American Express card and they swipe it, there's a committed promise from American Express or Visa to send digital currency to the bank account of the restaurant and an obligation from me to send my version of money to American Express. But there's no physical movement. But it seems to work because the people at the restaurant have faith that American Express is going to do what they do, and American Express has granted me credit based on my good history to promise to do what I do. Bitcoin works very similarly in that the system knows that I own a Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And if I choose to send a fraction of it or all of it to you in what we call a wallet to a wallet, the system will agree that I moved it from my control to your control. And the value that you and I equate to it was whatever the fair market value of the Bitcoin was that day, based on people who are willing to convert other kinds of currency to buy the Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. So it's literally, if there is no buyers, the fair market value of a Bitcoin is zero. And if there are lots of buyers, people who more want than are willing to sell, the price goes up. Mm-hmm. Just like in other currencies. But it's what we call, it's led by what we call a DAO, D-A-O, a distributed autonomous organization. So there's no government behind it. There's no sovereign. There's nobody saying, oh, we'll back this with silver or gold or any other kind of physical asset. It's just based on what people are willing and able to agree to.
Could I exchange Bitcoin for other currencies like the dollar or euro?
Yes, you can. You can exchange them through what they call exchange companies, companies like Coinbase or GDAX or Bitfinex that have agreed to accept your coin at as agreed upon that whatever the current fair market value is, and they will exchange it for a small fee into what they call fiat currency, any kind of non-digital currency. You can also exchange it from Bitcoin to any one of the other dozen or two dozen very active cryptocurrencies, ones like Dash or Litecoin or Ether, which is really Ethereum. There are a number of different cryptocurrencies. In fact, there are thousands of Ether-based cryptocurrencies that are running what they call a tokenized, kind of creating their own little general ledgers for specific purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And they use coin to motivate people to participate in their system.
Are Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies being used to make purchases of such things as Uber rides, restaurant meals, hotel accommodations, even cars?
Absolutely. And frequently, depending on where you are in parts of the world, there are people who have got Bitcoin ATMs, mm-hmm. right? And they've got Bitcoin-backed debit cards that you can then use like a normal debit card, or you can go to a place that says, we accept Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin today is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,000 for a coin. And if you were at Starbucks and you gave them $8 for your coffee, then Starbucks would transfer that decimal point of, you know, $8 divided by 8,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be, what, 0.1% of a coin, right? So you can – the nice thing about a coin is you can go to 0.00000001. There's an important thing to think about. Bitcoin is very much a monetarist system. If you think Milton Friedman from an economics, if I control the supply of money, I can control inflation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So very much a money supply growth. So it's a mathematical timed – calculation, I think, between now and 2040.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a finite number of Bitcoins that will be mined. To some degree, it's got a parallel with a South Pacific island that had a monetary system that both Milton Friedman wrote about and Mr. Keynes wrote about, and I believe it was called Fei, F-E-I. Fei was a monetary supply on an island that was predicated based on large limestone wheels or round rocks, effectively. The villagers decided that these limestone rocks represented wealth. But because they were heavy, 500, 600, 700 pounds, they didn't really move them. If you were a fish salesperson and I wanted to acquire some of your fish, we would agree that you just got a big sliver of my rock. And mm-hmm. since the village was closed, everybody knew that you now owned a part of my rock, and therefore you had wealth associated with your ownership of my rock. And that was stunning since it never moved. It never got into anybody's hand. And one time a wealthy family was moving a rock from another island to their island, and the ship sank with the big rock on it. But since everybody in the community knew that that family had a rock at the bottom of the ocean, they got to use that wealth in order to acquire things on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of in the philosophy of the understanding of that money itself really isn't a physical thing. It's the belief that I have that somebody else will give me credit in exchange for my version of currency. Malta is famous for, back in the Ottoman time, they were using their metals, their hard metals, their copper, et cetera, to place on ships. So they used different kind of metals, and it said it's not the metal, it's the faith, right? Mm-hmm. This is a good token of money. So when we start to think about money isn't physical in my pocket, but merely a mechanism of exchange that you and I agree to that settles my debt obligation to you, then money can be anything you want.
So how do I get my hands on Bitcoin? Or is it in my interest to do so?
Well, let's take that. Getting your hands on it, you go to that famous internet Google and you say, I want to open up a Bitcoin wallet. Easy places to go are places like Coinbase. Those are online wallets versus offline wallets. And you give them a certain amount of information and they open up an account for you, at which point you now need to fund it. So that means you probably have to send them what we call fiat currency. And at which point you can then go into their exchange and acquire Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
You can receive Bitcoin in exchange for payment of services. Maybe you have a garage sale and you want to sell a bicycle and somebody says, I'd like to pay you in Bitcoin. If you have a wallet, they immediately transfer from their wallet to your wallet the amount of Bitcoin necessary for that bicycle. That's how you get them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should Bill or Dan own Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency as a long-term hold, that's an investment decision. And it's a speculative investment decision because there isn't enough history around it to decide whether or not it has a long-term play or not. I receive payments in cryptocurrencies regularly because of the kind of work I do. I convert it to cash, fiat, U.S. dollars, technically, because those are monies that my firm needs to pay payroll and rent, and apparently my payroll wants to get paid in U.S. dollars, and my landlord has yet to accept my Bitcoin. If, on the other hand, you told me, hey, Dan, I have $100 million worth of wealth, and I'm thinking of buying $1 million worth of cryptocurrency, as long as it fit the rest of your investment portfolio, then that might be a worthwhile investment for you if it meets the rest of the criteria. Last December, I was in New York, and I was overhearing a doorman telling another doorman he was going to take his Christmas bonus and buy Bitcoin. And that made me nervous because I don't think the doorman understood enough about Bitcoin to be buying it, and hence he was speculating. And that is something I would not recommend to people because it is volatile and it can go to zero tomorrow. It can also go to $20,000 tomorrow, so who knows.
Anything else you would like to say on this subject, Dan?
I think that in 25 years, the world will want to know how we ever survived without the successors, whoever they are, of the Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dash, Litecoin market. I think that the distributed ledger technology is as ground-shaking change in technology as the internet was and as the telephone was and the telegraph was. It is an amazing piece of technology, not just for money, but for anything that requires a middleman to validate. This technology will validate the truth, and it's not hackable. I think that 20 years from now, people will say, would you like to pay me in pounds, euros, sterling, dollars, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Dash? How would you like to get paid? And we'll just pick it. I think that all money itself is already virtual. We just don't think of it that way. I'm bullish on the technology. Without doubt, the technology is wonderful and outstanding, and there will be bloody days in this, and there will be great days in it. I think this is a great change.
We thank Dan Morris for his insights regarding Bitcoin and hope you gained a better understanding of cryptocurrencies through our conversation. We appreciate your listening to CalCPA's Financial Empowerment Program, which was produced in March 2018. If you would like to comment about our show, have a question for a CPA, or would like to suggest topics for future programs, write us at financialempowerment@calcpa.org or simply visit www.calcpa.org. You can search there for a California CPA who can help you save on taxes, better manage your investments, or budget for those rainy days even sunny California sometimes has. Just click on the Find a CPA link. This is Bill Spaniel, and you've been listening to Edition 206 of Financial Empowerment, a production of the California Society of CPAs and CalCPA Institute.